He couldn't see who was shooting, and he had no weapon to return fire. The woman next to him was his wife. The young girl next to her was their daughter. A bullet sliced through his wife's wrist, and he heard her scream. Then a second bullet found its target, and his wife's eyes widened slightly. As his wife fell, he raced to his little girl's side to shield her. His fingers reached for hers, but missed. They always missed. He awoke and sat straight up, the sweat trickling down his cheeks before finally creeping onto his long, bushy beard. As he got up from the bed, his leg brushed against the old box he kept there. He hesitated and then lifted the top off. Inside was a ragged photo album. One by one, he looked at the few pictures of the woman who'd been his wife. Then he turned to the photos of his daughter, of the baby and toddler she'd been. Never a day went by that he didn't wonder what might have been. He looked around the cottage's sparsely furnished interior. Looking back at him were dusty shelves crammed with books covering an array of subjects. He checked his watch, took a pair of binoculars from the rickety wooden table next to his bed, and grabbed a frayed cloth knapsack off his desk. He stuffed the binoculars and a few journals in the knapsack and headed outside. He walked through the large wrought iron gates where the scrollwork announced that this was Mount Zion Cemetery, located in northwest Washington, D.C., and owned by the nearby Mount Zion United Methodist Church. He'd been engaged as the cemetery's caretaker some years ago. The cottage that came with the job was his first real home in a long time. He walked south on 27th Street, caught a metro bus, and was soon dropped a block or so from his second home of sorts. As he passed the small tent that at least technically belonged to him, he pulled the binoculars out of his knapsack and, from the shadow of a tree, used them to eye the building across the street. He had taken the government-issued binoculars with him after serving his country proudly before completely losing faith in its leaders. His real name he had not used in decades. He had been known for a long time now as Oliver Stone, a name he'd adopted in what could only be termed an act of cheeky defiance. Taking the irreverent film director's name as his own seemed appropriate, since this Oliver Stone was also very interested in the real truth. Through the binoculars, he continued to study the comings and goings at the mansion that never ceased to fascinate him. Then Stone entered his small tent, and using an old flashlight, he carefully noted down his observations in one of the journals he'd brought in his knapsack. Returning outside, he watched the guards who holstered semi-automatic pistols and held machine guns, or occasionally spoke into walkie-talkies. He made eye contact with one of the guards, who called out, "Hey, Stone, I hear Humpty Dumpty was pushed. Pass it on." Some of the other men laughed at this remark, and even Stone's lips curled into a smile. "Duly noted," he answered back. He hitched his frayed pants up tighter around his slender waist, smoothed back his long grayish-white hair, and stopped for a moment to retie the string that was trying and failing to hold his right shoe together. "It is new clothes that you need," a female voice said in the darkness. He looked up to see the speaker leaning against a statue of Major General Comte de Rochambeau, an American Revolutionary War hero. "It really is the new clothes that you need, Oliver," the woman said again. "And the haircut, too, yes. Oliver, it is a new everything that is needed."
"I'm sure that I do," he replied quietly. "Yet it's all in one's priorities, I suppose, and fortunately, vanity has never been one of mine."
This woman called herself Adelphia. She had an accent that he'd never been able to exactly place, although it was definitely European, probably Slavic. She was tall and spare, with black hair shot through with gray that she wore long. The 6-foot-long, freestanding banner outside her tent proclaimed, "A fetus is a life. If you don't believe it, you're going straight to hell." There was very little that was subtle about Adelphia. The small sign outside of Oliver Stone's tent read simply, "I want the truth." He had yet to find it after all these years.
"I go to get the cafe, Oliver. Would you like some? I have money."
"No, thank you, Adelphia. I have to go somewhere." She scowled. "Another meeting is where you go? What good does it give you? It is not young you are no more, and you should not be walking in the dark. This is a dangerous place." He glanced at the armed men. "Actually, I think it's fairly secure here." Then Stone's attention was caught by the sudden activity across the street. Policemen and marked cruisers were assembling.